We got some breaking news here. Jay Glazer tweeting out that the Dallas Cowboys have fired their defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan.
Wow.
So, that's really going to change things moving forward. I guess that means, obviously, Mike McCarthy will be back. I think we knew that. I mean, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones have indicated that. But that's a move, I suppose, down in Dallas. And to talk about a lot of different things happening throughout the NFL, including the upcoming Wild Card weekend, 3 games tomorrow, 3 games on Sunday. Here is NFL insider from NBC, Peter King. How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're doing very well. We want to get to the games here momentarily, but this Deshaun Watson story coming out of Houston about him not being happy with ownership and the hierarchy of the team, what can you tell us about that? What do we know about what's going on with Watson and the Texans, and where does this go in the future?
Watson's good friends with Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes has been singing the praises of Eric Bieniemy, the Kansas City offensive coordinator, who very much wants to get a head coaching job. And he not only wants to get a head coaching job, but I think he's almost the NFL is going to have a lot of egg on its face if Eric Bieniemy doesn't get a head coaching job. Because of his resume, particularly his last 8 years coaching with coaching on Andy Reid's staff. So, now this could change, but as of now, the Kansas City Chiefs have not gotten a request from the Houston Texans to interview Eric Bieniemy. The other 5 teams that have coaching openings this year all have requested permission to talk to Eric Bieniemy. So that's one thing that burns him. And the other one, which Adam Schefter and others have reported, is that he was asked by the ownership of the Texans to give his opinion on personnel people that he knows or that friends in the league think are very good. And he gave him his opinion on a few. And they never even asked him about the guy who was hired, who is Nick Caserio, Belichick's right-hand man in New England. So that is what has led to some of his dissatisfaction up to this point.
Peter, I'm kind of 50-50 on bulletin board material. I think sometimes it's yep, nothing that can be posted and motivate you. But sometimes you get that one comment, like Juju Smith-Schuster's, where it's just like, these guys are a bunch of gray faces. They're nameless people to me, and they're just the Browns. Like, wasn't that a little bit? I don't think that Tomlin's a guy that would look at that and support that kind of comment in any way possible. Like, what do you make of that?
I think when Juju Smith-Schuster dances on a team's 50-yard line as if to say, we're going to dance all over you today, that, to me, really goes over the line, and Tomlin interceded in that. You know, I heard him say this, and I actually watched the video because it looked like just an unnecessary thing to say. And I'm sure the Browns are going to take it and run with it. And you know, it's going to be all over their locker room. This guy doesn't think we're any good and all this. We'll show them all that. But I think so much of that stuff is really kind of overrated. I've covered the NFL for a long time, and I've never gone into a locker room after a game and listened to a guy say, yep, I played harder today because of a comment from Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, I just don't think it's that big a deal. Now, when he danced on people's logo at midfield, that was a different story. The Bengals tried to knock him into next week, and on a couple of occasions in that game, really hit him legally very hard, but hit him very, very hard. So I don't think it's that big a deal. Most people do think it's a big deal. We'll see on Sunday whether it is a big deal.
I kind of look at it as a sign of the confidence coming out of Pittsburgh, not necessarily based on the history between these two teams, but what's going on in Cleveland, where COVID has completely shut them down. They have not been able to get into their facility. They haven't been practicing. Their head coach won't be there. They're losing a bunch of starters. And a lot of times the guys who talk the toughest are the ones that realize, I can kind of get away with talking tough because I don't think I'm going to get smacked back. Could you see it being kind of from that angle, Peter, where Pittsburgh's looking at Cleveland saying, I don't know how they're going to beat us because they can't even practice. They don't have their head coach. It's a mess what's going on with the Browns right now.
Here's one of the difficult things for the Browns, maybe even as difficult as losing Kevin Stefanski. The left guard on my 2020 NFL All-Pro team is Joel Bitonio. And Joel Bitonio is one of the guys who's going to be out Sunday with COVID. And, you know, a coach does a lot. No, and I'm not demeaning in any way, because I think Stefanski has been phenomenal for this team. But in my opinion, I think it's really difficult when you start losing important players against a team with a great, not a good, but a great defensive front, and you lose Bitonio. That's a huge, huge loss for this team. And, you know, at least in my opinion, as big a loss as the head coach. And so I think they're obviously going to have a really rough time on Sunday.
With Peter King, NFL Insider, we've been talking about the Bills all season, watching them rise. And, you know, every year when we get to playoff time, we discuss quarterbacks with pressure on them to get it done. And, you know, there's obviously veterans that need to get it done before the clock expires, guys like Breeze, not so much a guy like Brady, but he'd like to do it clearly in Tampa. I think Rodgers would apply with only one Super Bowl on his resume. And then when it comes to the younger quarterbacks, I think the focus, understandably so, is on Lamar Jackson because of his playoff resume with him winning the MVP a year ago. But Josh Allen is in a similar scenario. I mean, it was really ugly in Houston last year, like really ugly in the second half. And he's had a remarkable season. But we got to see it come this weekend, don't we? Like, he's got to show up and play, because that Indianapolis defense, they can stop the run. They do not stop the pass, and that should set up well for Allen.
Here's the thing. I mean, it's very interesting when we talk about young players, and, yeah, boy, a lot of pressure on Josh Allen, a lot of pressure on Lamar Jackson. Well, I looked it up today, and Peyton Manning's first playoff win was at age 27. And believe me, he was starting to hear, because I remember it, he was starting to hear some of the things that John Elway heard in Denver. Can't win a playoff game, can't win the big game, can't get to the Super Bowl, all that stuff. And Elway erased that all, but it took him to the last 2 years of his career to do so. And think about it now. Josh Allen's 24 years old. I don't care if he throws five interceptions on Sunday and they lose by 20 points. I'm not giving up on Josh Allen. You know, I'm just going to say, hey, it was a bad Sunday. You know, but, and the same thing for Lamar Jackson. Now, the difference with Lamar Jackson, like, when I look at Josh Allen right now, I look at a guy who I've forgotten that game last year, and I'm exaggerating, but I've forgotten it because for all but three or four games this year, Josh Allen was as good as any quarterback in football. So he buried the narrative on him. Careless, inaccurate, explosive, but always going to make enough mistakes to lose. Okay? He's kind of buried that this year. And Lamar Jackson, look, the difference with him is he's played great almost at every turn, except in two, they're not humiliating, but in two very poorly played playoff games. So I just kind of look at him and say, I look at both of those young guys and say, they got a long way to go. And I'm just not going to draw any conclusions on their legacy or careers based on a game that's played when they're 24 or 25 years old.
With Peter King, NFL Insider, I saw this about an hour ago. NFL Research tweeted this out, that the starting quarterbacks that will play in this year's playoffs, bunch of records being set. Six Super Bowl winners, that's tied most in single postseason all time. 12 combined Super Bowl wins, a lot of that is Brady, clearly. But four former Super Bowl MVPs, tied for most all-time. Seven combined Super Bowl MVP awards. That's the most all-time. So we're talking Roethlisberger, Russell, Brady, Mahomes, Rodgers, Breeze. They all made it. They're all here at the end. Is that just simply the way it was supposed to play out? Is that coincidental? Or does it say something about COVID and how difficult this season has been that maybe in retrospect we should have expected, you know, the cream of the crop to be standing at the end, and a lot of these veteran quarterbacks who have been in their system for a long, long time, Brady notwithstanding, to feel comfortable enough to kind of get through a lot of the waves that have been crashing on them this year?
That's a really interesting question, and I have not thought of it, but my absolute gut feeling is that COVID has very little to do with what's happened in this season. In fact, had there been no COVID and had the offseason been absolutely regular, in my opinion, I think Tom Brady and the Bucks might have been the best team in the NFC. Because if you think about it, you know, and this is a weird thing to start. Tom Brady, all he did was throw at a local school with some of his receivers. He never had an opportunity to meet or to plot the future with coaches, anything like that, until July 28th is when they were first able to get together. So just imagine that Brady for 6 months, you know, sort of foaming at the mouth to get into his new offense, his new team, and he can't do anything. And that's why I think they were shaky early. So I think it is an advantage to have been with your same team. But I do think that no matter what you had to do in the off season, I think cream rises to the top. J.C. Treader, the NFLPA president, NFL Players Association president, wrote a little manifesto a couple of weeks ago in which he said, I don't think we need off-season programs anymore. We've played well enough so that it should be proof that teams don't need to do all this stuff in the off-season. And the initial reaction of every coach and GM was, he's crazy, he's out of his mind. But honestly, I'm not sure he's wrong. I'm really not sure he's wrong. I do think there should be some mental repetitions and some mental work in the off-season. But I think it's silly for in a game as physical as the NFL is to spend a lot of time hitting each other in the off season.
Peter, do you have any inside scoops on the job openings, head coaches? My boy Adam Gase going to show up somewhere? Please don't. Is it going to be just recycle these guys? Is there new blood? I know they're talking about Meyer maybe making $12 million down in Jacksonville. I don't know if that can be the case. Any inside scoops on that?
You know, there's three little tidbits that I think are kind of interesting, okay? So Arthur Smith, who is the offensive coordinator at Tennessee, and who the GM of the Titans, John Robinson, told me in the summer, what I like about Arthur Smith is that he zigs when the defense is zagging. He's very, very good at keeping people off guard. I think he's going to get a job. I think the Atlanta Falcons really like him. That's number one. Number two, I think Urban Meyer is a kind of a fair-haired guy in Jacksonville. I was told this week categorically that deal is not done. They don't even know each other very well yet. I think Urban Meyer wants to do it. I would be highly, highly, highly cautious, as I've written the last 2 weeks. He's quit head coaching jobs at age 45, 46, and 54. And whether because of exhaustion, unhappiness, health reasons, you know, I question also how much he would be able to cope with the losing that invariably comes with a new franchise. I mean, 15 years ago, Nick Saban was the Urban Meyer. And he went to Miami with much fanfare, got a five-year contract, was made the second highest paid coach in football by Wayne Huizenga, the owner of the Dolphins. And after the second year, he was 15-17 and begged Huizenga to let him out of his contract so he could go coach Alabama. I just, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't hire Urban Meyer, but boy, I'd be very, very skeptical. I think the third nugget about head coaches is that, you know, the Eric Bieniemy thing is going to be very interesting. There's a lot of people in the NFL watching that. If he doesn't get a head coaching job, I think there's going to be some real dissatisfaction on the part of the black coaches in the NFL, because they view him as a guy that, you know, Doug Peterson came off the Kansas City staff of Andy Reid and got a job in Philadelphia. Matt Nagy came off the Kansas City staff of Andy Reid doing the same thing, and he got a job in Chicago. And yet, Eric Bieniemy can't get a job when Patrick Mahomes is telling everybody in the league, listen, believe me, take my word for it, this guy's unbelievable. So those are kind of the three things I'm thinking of right now.
Well, it's going to happen at some point, but the ball games are going to be here before you know it. We look forward to it. 3 tomorrow, 3 Sunday. Enjoy those, Peter, and we'll break it all down and get back at it next Friday. Thank you for this.
Thanks, guys.
There's Peter King, our NFL insider from NBC. Yep, there are a lot of good every year it's like, this is a spot you really want to coach. And it's like, really? That right. team has not won in a million years, but all of a sudden it's going to change.
I've told Jamie, the Jets. Yeah. Jamie's had the same thing. We both had buddies that are, look, they'd call me up and say, what do you think about this position? What do you think? I'm just like, you know what? That team's so bad right now. You're going to go there, and you're going to hang your coat on that team, and you're just going to be labeled a loser. And that'll be the end of it. Some guys, it's not like Gerard. Not everyone's Gerard Gallant, where it's like, okay, you're still a good coach. You got Camden, Florida, come out to Vegas. Sometimes you get that hung around you, and it's like, that's it. You're a losing coach. You can't win, and that's the only chance you get. It's a tough thing. It's a tough thing to break into, man.
Well, if you're an up-and-coming coach, you have to choose the right situation. I read the article the other day. I think it was Simmons and Sheldon Keefe. And, you know, Sheldon said, like, there were times where he was sitting at the Rico Center going, I don't know if I'll ever coach the Leafs. I mean, Babcock seemed like he was going to be here forever. You know what I mean?
It's crazy, man.
You have to be. And I'm sure there were other scenarios where Sheldon could have been like, you know what, I'll take that job in Colorado when Patrick Waugh, you know, left the team, what, a week before the season started? You know, Jared Bednar got the job, and Jared's a very good coach.
He's done really well with it.
I'm sure they've interviewed other people at that time. Point being is, like, you have to choose the right situation that works for you sometimes as well, because you're right. Like, you get labeled a loser. You jump on a sinking ship, and it takes 2 or 3 years to turn it around, and you're not the guy who turns it around.
You're a loser.
But that's where I was going to ask. Like, Adam Gase, you guys think he'd never gets another
No
job.
Way. Like, Hayes, I love the Jets. The Jets, who were they interviewing the other day? The guy that was with the Bengals for a long time.
Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis. It's like, I like the name Marvin Lewis. He seems like that prototypical football guy. He was there a long time. Yeah, and they made the playoffs a bunch of times under Marvin. But at the end of the day, did he really do anything where you're like, we got to have this guy? I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe he could be a good guy to go into the Jets, but to me, it's either got to be a superstar coach, and I don't know how the hell you do that. It's like, you're going to pull somebody out of retirement like Bill Cowher, or it's either got to be that or some next up-and-comer.
Well, that's why Urban Meyer gets brought up so much, because
I know,
Urban
but
Meyer...
Peter King just said it. This guy retired twice because of stress. He couldn't handle whatever, and all of a sudden you want to bring him down?
And he's a college guy. He's a coach guy.
Well,
he can check off a couple of different boxes. The fact is, like, a superstar Hall of Famer isn't going to Jacksonville. Like, he's not. So that's why it's not a surprise that Urban Meyer, not only is his name attached to it, but the price tag is attached to it. He knows they're desperate. He knows they need to turn the corner. He knows Trevor Lawrence is watching, saying, guys, what are you going to do here? And Urban's like, I'll come out of retirement. I'll come up to the NFL, but $12 million a year. You know, where he'd
do you think Trevor Lawrence has enough power? Trevor Lawrence has enough power to already call the organization and say,
"No,
where are we going with the coach?"
No, I don't think so. I mean, listen, in the meetings, you have to bring it up, and he's of course got enough power to be like, "Can you break down your plan?" You know, well, for sure. But I don't think he can say, "Hey, listen, before you draft me, and I'm technically an employee, here's what I want to see happen."
That would be
pretty shocking, I think.
Dude, it wouldn't shock me if he's allowed to at least sniff.
But why would you want, if you're Urban Meyer, I mean, maybe just for the challenge, but these college coaches don't get paid, you know, $80. Like they make
a fortune.
He probably made $8 million a year coaching college.
That's right.
All day long.
He was making a fortune.
And access to, you know, the school's private jet or all of these perks that you wouldn't even know that are written into the contract. Like that's, like these college coaches, like, they earn their money. Don't get me wrong. They recruit and they work hard, but it's a fantastic job if you can be
top dog there. Oh, if you're
the
in there and you've
there.
Got a big program and just top end 5-star players just naturally come
rolling
to you.
Rolling through, yeah.
You're made in the shade. Look at Nick Saban. Obviously, look at Urban Meyer. They're great, great coaches. Like, there's a reason it works. There's a reason every player wants to be there. It's because they know what they're getting. But those are state-run universities. Like Ohio State is a state-run university. I'm pretty sure Urban Meyer was the highest paid state employee by like a significant margin, like $3 or $4 million more than the next person, who was probably a coach of the basketball team or something like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I can't, like, we'll have to find out, but how much would Urban Meyer make per season?
Oh, he would have
been college,
making
like
six and a half, I think, anyway.
More.
He might have been
like,
making
Grappler, find it out.
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, listen, 6.5 is a fortune. I mean, like, Babcock signed the biggest deal in NHL history, and it was 6 a year. So Urban Meyer's making 6.5 in the quote unquote minors. That's a massive amount of cake.